You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association, N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Fortaleza Brazil, our main event. Marlon Moraes taking on Rafael Assuncao 2. It is a rematch. We are back after a couple weeks off again, and we have card after card after card coming up. I am pumped up. Here to talk DFS, DraftKings MMA on RotoWire MMA. This is Fight IQ. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, here with the analyst of Fight IQ. It is Chris Olsen. Joe also goes by Sun Tzu. Guys, are you ready for this long stretch we have coming up?
Man, it's going to be brutal, man. We got 9 weeks in a row? Is that it?
Not brutal. It's awesome. But talk to me again in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Quick props to DK for coming up with some of the sweetest tickets for the card at Barclays. You know, Dillashaw, Cejudo. I mean, no, that is probably one of the better MMA live experiences I had. It was all first class the entire way. So props to DK.
And you were hanging out with me and our boy Kevin, the fantasy football geek. Couldn't get much better.
Yeah, and there was a bunch of other guys that they flew in, which was kind of cool. Like, it was nice to put like some names to faces. You know, like Alessi J and JBC, JBC, JBC. You know, it was really cool to like meet some people for the first time. And we had some nice props. We had people stop up and say that they liked the shows, and it was really cool. It was great experience. You know, I put my hand up to DK and said, hey, whenever you guys are doing that again, keep me in mind.
Yep.
It's Chris off.
Christian Duffy's jumping back on. He said that somebody's mic is reverberating. So
I don't think it's
maybe
mine.
It was his.
Yeah.
You sound fine to me. I'm hoping Chris comes back. Otherwise, I guess me and just going to roll here because we are live. While we wait for him to come back, I will say make sure you there. He just jumped in. Chris, you all right over there?
Yes. If you guys were hearing a lot of reverb, that was me. I'm sorry about that. But it's all fixed now.
I wasn't.
Right, so that ruins your chance to say something cool and witty in the intro.
I know. I blew it.
I'm just going to jump right in to make sure you check out RotoWire, make this podcast possible. RotoWire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium services, articles, optimizers, picks, cheat sheets, all the good stuff for daily fantasy and season-long sports, all sports. Make sure and check them out. Make sure you like this video if you're watching live on YouTube. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and this YouTube channel. And you know what? Give all of us a follow on Twitter. I'm at the DFS Sniper with one S. You'll know why that's funny if you've been on Twitter today. That's at Real Chris Olsen. That's at Sun Tzu. Also want to give a couple quick shout-outs. All three of us are in the MMA World Cup run by our friend Brett Apley. You can follow everything that's going on there on Twitter at DFSMMAChamp. And basically, it's World Cup style. Everybody's in group play. Top three will advance into a bracket. and take down some cool prizes there. A lot of great players are playing in it. Aside from us, I actually didn't have a good first week, so anything can happen. Make sure and follow that. Props to Brett for running that. If you're interested in season long, the old league, I won't even go into who ran it or what happened. It is no longer functioning. It was a season long league that was points cumulative total. I have started another league. I'm calling it the MMA Ironman. It is a season long league. It's going to start next week with the Melbourne card at UFC 234. Running through the 2019 calendar year, $100 buy-in. DM me for details. Also see my pinned tweet at the DFS Sniper for rules. But quick version, it is a kind of season-long, obviously, GPP-type style. You're going to score points for each event you're in. If you finish in the top 25% of the field, you score some points and more points as you move up. So missing an event or two won't kill you because 75% of the field isn't scoring any points on that week. So kind of a season-long thing. There's about 60 people signed up right now. I'd like to get that up to 100 is the goal. My personal goal is to get 82, which is one more than the last year season-long league ran, and we will go from there. So thanks to everybody who has supported it. Paul Shaughnessy shouted it out on the Dogger Pass podcast. But thanks to those guys. And, yes, hit me up on Twitter, here on YouTube if you're around and you're interested. Season-long MMA is back for 2019. That was a lot of intro, guys. Thanks for bearing with us. And you know what? In all actuality, I'm just stalling. I don't want to pronounce these freaking names this week. And I really had to withhold myself from dropping an F-bomb. But
Where is H3 Buddha when you need him? I mean, he is the linguist extraordinaire of the MMA DFS community.
H3 Buddha just joined Iron Man. We got him in.
Yeah, one quick point about Iron Man is, and again, I really have to bite my tongue, but in terms of payouts, there will, if anybody, DM Sean if you have any concern at all about payouts and events that transpired with the last contest. I know for a fact that Sean has even signed over his organ donor card, so if he meets with an untimely demise, we will get the money from his organ sales. But in all seriousness, this money is it's a much tighter group of people here that are looking at the money. And if any time you want to see how much money is in the pool, just ask, and Sean will send you a screenshot. Yep. You know, unlike what we had in the past. So and you know, anybody who wants to talk about what happened in the past, feel free to DM me. But let's move on to the fights.
I will say I'll take a screenshot of the pool once everything's collected, because right now I'm collecting through PayPal and Venmo. When we're done, I'll put it all together and I'll screenshot. I got no problem. So anyway, let's move on to these fights. And Magomed Bibliatov, 9,400, taking on Rogerio Bontorin. I got through that relatively unscathed. He's 6,800. This line has been moving. Let's see where it is now. Bibliatov still a minus 320 favorite, but that has come down. Bontorin is plus 290, which, as you can hear, my cat firmly agrees with. For me, Bibliatov coming off of that knockout loss to John Moraga, where he was hyped up, people were down on Moraga, taking some time off. Bontorin, though, is no slouch to me. It's 6,800 UFC debutant, who I think has some skills, especially on the ground. Chris, how do you have this one?
Yeah, Bontorin definitely has some skills, but I might say only on the ground. I'm not a big fan of his stand-up. I think he, he doesn't really have a good sense of range on the feet. I think he's hittable in his contender series fight. I mean, he nearly got his lights churned out trying to throw a rear uppercut. I mean, he somehow survived and also won the fight, so, you know, speaks volumes for his toughness. But I'm just not sure that, you know, we can trust him to win a fight, just because I always talk about this: when you're a jiu-jitsu guy and you don't have a reliable way of getting it to the ground, that's problematic for me. I mean, he's not a wrestler. He generally gets takedowns by, you know, bulldozing his opponents to the ground, and I'm not sure how much that's going to work at this level. Bibliatov is, I consider him the much better striker, the much better wrestler. My problem I have with him is he kind of reminds me of watching Muslim Salikov. I mean, he's a guy, he throws a lot of kicks, a lot of spinning attacks. A lot of them are just seem like they're mainly for show. I mean, they don't, I got very frustrated watching that Janelle Lauza fight back because it just seems like so much wasted energy and wasted movement to me. When he gets his combinations working and he gets his offense flowing, he can do well. And I like how he transitioned from striking to grappling. But I guess this is a long-winded way of me saying that I don't know if I like anybody for this fight because I don't really expect Bibliotov to finish. He doesn't really look like a potent finisher to me, at least not at the highest level. So I guess what I would say is if you want to take a flyer on the grappler and Bonten, go for it. But I can't see myself getting too many lineups in there with a 9,400 for Bibliotov.
Joe, how about for you?
Well, my analysis is going to be a lot more brief.
Succinct? Yeah.
Yeah, there was
a rain Chris in these days.
Yeah, there was actually some applause when Bibliotov got knocked out by John Moraga. Apparently, he has some sort of allegiance or affinity for a Chechen dictator of ill repute. So everybody was sort of happy when he got knocked out by John Moraga. Be that what it may, let's talk about this relative to DraftKings at 9.4K. And I am picking Bibliotov to win here, but at 9.4K for a fight that's likely going to go to decision, no thank you. I will have shares of him, but I think there's a lot more value, lower in the salary scale. So I'm going to pick Bibliotov. You know, if you're doing mass entry GPPs north of 20 lineups, I would take a share or two at 6.8K of the other guy, simply because there has been some line movement, which I find curious. So at 6.8K, that does open up a world of possibilities on DK. I am not endorsing him as a winner, just saying for game theory purposes and variance, you might want to have a share or two if you're going to max enter. But Bibliotov to win.
Yeah, I'm also picking Bibliotov to win. The concern is the scoring because he's not good. He shouldn't want to grapple. His best path to victory is staying away and using his striking. And at 9,400, I don't know how well that's going to score. And if they go to the ground, every second he's down there is a little bit scary with a guy like Bonturon. But so I am picking Bibliotov to win. We'll make it a sweep there, and we'll move on to Syed Nurmagomedov, 8,200. Picking on Ricardo Ramos at 8,000. Odds value alert, Ramos 8,000. He's minus 140. Big line movement has continued to move. The comeback on Nurmagomedov is plus 130. He fought at 125 in his last fight. Absolute brutal weight cut. Did get a win down there over Justin Scoggins. Close fight. Some people thought he lost. I did score for Nurmagomedov, but an incredibly close fight. Ramos has had that highlight reel knockout over Ayman Zahabi. Looked really good against Kwang Ho Kang last time out in that his...
Reboot Sean. There he is.
I'm back.
Okay.
Sorry. I was rambling there for a minute. So Saeed Nurmagomedov fought a flyweight last time out. Split decision against Scoggins. Controversial fight. Some people thought he won. Some people thought he lost. I had it for him. Ramos improving. His stand-up really looked good against Kwang Ho Kang, took him down a few times, looked like the real deal in that fight. So close fight. Joe, who you got?
So I actually thought Scoggins won that fight, actually quite clearly. Be that what it may, I liked Ramos before I even saw the DK salary, so the line movement is a benefit. Unfortunately, I do think it is going to make him very highly owned because of the line value and the fact that, there are quite a number of people who have been, doing these pods that have selected him. So I hate to kind of jump on the train. I would watch ownership, but I am picking Ramos to win here.
Oh, I am. Okay. I'm not muted. I thought I was muted for a second. Chris, are you good?
I echo that sentiment. I always hate when there's line movement on a fighter that I like because I know people follow that almost exclusively, and I know that's going to affect the ownership. But regardless, I actually like Ramos a lot here. I think he's got better striking than you might see from a jiu-jitsu guy, your typical jiu-jitsu guy. I think he throws a little bit of power, throws in combination. He does good body work. Then Saeed Nurmagomedov, I just don't really see that much to like about him. As a striker, he's kind of stiff. He tends to just he's done this in the regionals, and he did it a couple times in the Scoggins fight, actually. Tends to just flurry in with his chin up, which I don't like at all. Ramos has shown that he can counterpunch. We know about Ramos's jiu-jitsu accolades. Saeed is a wrestler, much like the other Nurmagomedov, but not nearly as much as, you know, the sort of pressure smothering kind. He's much more of a traditional takedown artist, and then when he gets you down, it's more pressure and passing. So he's not going to rack up points like a Khabib will. I don't think he throws with a lot of power. I think this is a relatively safe fight for Ricardo Ramos, and I like it quite a bit. Huh?
Don't jinx it like that.
I know. Those are my famous last words. Every time I say something like that, the guy gets crushed.
Well, Chris, what percentage of ownership do you think he'll get from the casuals who think he's Khabib?
Yeah, I know. Well, they've already seen him once, so unfortunately, I think that kind of just kind of flown a little bit.
If it was a pay-per-view card, I'd be on board with you, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, people seen Nurmagomedov, they're like, oh shit, I gotta bet that guy, you know? So.
He's good in the scrambles. He's slippery guy, throws flashy stuff. I'm taking Ramos too. I think he should just be better everywhere. It just makes me nervous how many people are picking Ricardo Ramos. He feels like the Twitter mush this week.
Yeah, he really does.
He could be, but you know, I can't go by that. I mean, I got to just go by what I see. And you know, I really just think, like you echoed it, Sean, I think he's better everywhere. And 8,400. I don't know about a finish, although we did see Saeed get dropped twice in that Scottish.
He's only 8,000.
Huh?
He's only 8,000.
That's true. I was actually thinking of our next guy for 8,400. Mm-hmm. We'll get to him. So I like Ramos quite a bit. He's the play. Not going to have much Saeed. I think Ramos is better everywhere.
All right. Let's move on to, you know, can we just skip this fight? I don't want to go over these names. I'm just going to do their last names and get close. Fritas. Fritadas.
That's right.
8,400. Taking on Kolaris at 7,800. Kolaris is the small underdog, plus 110. Fritas is the favorite, minus 120. I think we're up to Chris to start this one off. Two UFC newcomers, both fighting out of Jungle Fight, which is not my favorite Brazilian MMA promotion, but everywhere in MMA, in Brazilian MMA, you crush cans. What do you got for these two can crushers?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I was thinking about Jungle Fight is probably, you know, as far as regionals go, probably one of my least favorite promotions for talent, just because of what you mentioned. But I actually like Freitas quite a bit here. I think.
Really? I'm on the other side.
That's a hot take.
Well, he's the more expensive guy, so I don't know. But all right. So anyway, I just think Kolaris, actually, I think he's got one major deficiency that really makes this fight good for Freitas. Kolaris, he likes to, sort of bulldoze his way in with strikes and get to the double leg and, find his jiu-jitsu. And Freitas likes to hit, reactive double leg takedowns. We've seen him do it a couple different times on the regional scene in a couple different fights. I think he's the much more defensively responsible person here. I think Kolaris leaves himself open to be hit a lot. And I think Freitas is actually, you know, pretty slick everywhere. He's got great jiu-jitsu, obviously. He's got better traditional wrestling than Kolaris, I would say, although Kolaris likes his double legs up against the fence. I look at this fight and I see a lot of advantages for Freitas here. And I'm going to be picking him quite comfortably.
Joe, let's let you have the first crack at Chris here.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm really going to be easy on Chris because I don't.
It's the unknown guy.
Yeah, you've got two guys coming out of regional promotions. The one thing I will say about Kolaris is, you know, he does train at Team Magera, which I kind of like. You know, you've got a 6-0 fighter in Kolaris fighting against an 11-4 fighter in 11-4 fighter in Freitas. I don't know the camp that he trains at. It's just really hard to say. I mean, I think the line has it right. I mean, 120, 110 is about as close to a pick'em as you're going to get in MMA. And I think because of that reason, I'm glad that Chris actually has a hot take, but because because of that reason, I would gravitate towards the lower priced guy, but for no reason other than, you know, perceived odds value in a really, really close fight. So that's kind of why I would look in that direction. I mean, don't put any stock in this selection, but purely based on odds value and salary.
Well, I'll
go a little harder. But I really can't give Chris too much crap because there are advantages for Freitas in this fight. There are, and there's two regional guys. Anything could happen. We could see a double knockout, and it wouldn't totally stun me. Freitas is better on the feet, for sure. But both these guys, I think, thrive in the grappling, and I think from what I've seen, just grappling wise, I trust Kolaris's grappling more. I think he's got a better sub game. I think he's the better black belt. I don't think Freitas's defensive wrestling is good. They both have good wrestling. I don't know if his defensive wrestling is good enough to stop those bull rush takedowns. And either way, I think on the feet, I think Kolaris is going to force the distance to be closed. I think Freitas's best chance to win is either to keep on the feet with defensive wrestling, which he could do. I just don't think he will, but I can't deny it's out of the realm of possibility. Or he's able to stay away, circle off as Freitas rushes forward. Path to victory him. Personally, though, I see Kolaris getting the grappling match he wants and finding a submission somewhere along the line. So when I say let's go after Chris, I really can't. It's not a hard pick. Just the way I play this fight in my mind, I think the grappling advantage for Kolaris is enough to get him a win. And he is cheaper, so he's my preferred player.
By the way, for the millions of viewers, these two fighters did fight in different Brazilian promotions. So Kolaris did fight at Jungle Fight, did fight in Jungle Fight, where Freitas fought in Chuto, Brazil. So these guys were in different promotions.
I think they both fought a Jungle Fight at one point, didn't they?
At least the last three fights, Kolaris was in Jungle Fights. Not that it really makes that big a difference. It's just they were in different promotions. So I thought I'd pass that on to the millions of viewers.
I mean, the millions appreciate it.
Yeah.
So Chris, is that a better argument for Kolaris for you at least?
I see why you like Kolaris. But I just think, I mean, I really have a very clear picture in my mind about Kolaris rushing in and Freitas hitting a reactive double leg and getting his jiu-jitsu game working from there. I can see that happening so clearly, you can't even believe it.
All right, well, let's move on to, I can't believe we got to talk about this fight. Junior Albini, 8,100. Junior, I can't defend a mother Ezekiel choke Albini.
Don't hate the goat. Come on, stop.
No, sorry, Alexia Linick, you're terrible. Taking on Jarzinho Rosenstruik. That is quite a name. He's also 8,100. This is our mid-range fight of the week. Albini is the favorite right now, -115. Comeback on Rosenstruik is +105. Personally, and look, when Albini first came into the UFC, I picked him to beat Timothy Johnson. And I look pretty smart, and I've looked really stupid the last two. I'm off the bandwagon. Dude does not move his feet as well as I thought he did. Not as good of a technical striker as he was in the regional scene, a victim of the Brazilian regional scene. Has looked terrible. Can't defend a takedown. Rosenstruik hits really hard, counters really well, has a kickboxing background. Albini's path to victory is through the grappling. I don't think he's smart enough to do that if he can't stop an Ezekiel choke. So I like Rosenstruik in this one, 8,100. But these are big guys, GPP fight for me. Joe, start us off.
Well, I think, you know, unfortunately, this is a fight that has to, at least in some respect, be targeted because it's got the number one inside the distance prop of any fight on this card in terms of finishing inside the distance. Individually, maybe each fighter doesn't have a great inside the distance prop, but the fight as a whole, I think has got the highest. I think it's -300. We'll finish inside the distance. This fight now, you know, you've got Big Boy, which is the nickname of the fighter from Suriname, Roshan Shock. You know, he's a kickboxer with zero ground game. I mean, whatever film you can watch on this guy, he knows not what to do when he hits the mat. He doesn't know what a whizzer is. He lays there. He is very powerful. He looks a little bit like Charles Barkley. But he's a powerful guy. He hits hard. He is a kickboxer. I am going to the well once more with Albini simply because I see Albini as having his back up against the wall. I cannot imagine that, you know, the UFC is going to give this guy another fight if he loses. I see him as more technical standing. Whatever limited ground game he does have, he should put to use on this guy. I think he needs to survive the onslaught for 90 seconds to 2 minutes. I think the longer the fight goes, the advantage should go to Albini. We know at least he can complete 3 rounds. I'm assuming his cardio is going to be better. This guy looks pretty muscular. So I'm going to go to the well one more time with Albini. Although, you know, this is GPP only. Anybody who uses either one of these guys in cash is crazy. This is not a good cash week in general. But anybody who uses either one of these guys in cash is nuts. But I would certainly target this fight because of the high likelihood of a finish.
Chris.
Yeah, I agree with that. Before I get started, it needs to be said that Rosenstruik, thank you very much. Rosenkrantz and Guildensterner.
Yes.
His pride fight, he actually got yellow carded for having grease on him at the beginning of his pride fight.
Woo!
Towel him off.
Love it.
So that'll be interesting if Albini does go for a takedown. But look, he probably won't, but we have seen him clinch up before and stall out. And even if he does that, I mean, that could wear on the gas tank of a guy like
Rosenstruik, I believe.
Rosenstruik, there you go. Never again. But yeah, the main reason I'm going, and I was going back and forth on this, but the main reason I'm going back to Albini here is because Rosenstruik has this really bad habit of just leaning away from strikes. And Albini's got pretty fast hands, and I could see him really eating a hard combination just by virtue of the fact that he has no striking defense. And again, as you know, you both said, if it hits the mat, the game's over. If it goes more than a round, we'll have to see what happens. I just think Albini, Rosenstruik is more of a liability here than Albini is. Although I acknowledge that he throws really hard and, has nice hands and throws in combination that could definitely knock him out. But I just see a couple too many holes in his game, standing and, of course, on the floor. So, yeah, I have to go back once more to the well myself and pick Albini here.
I can't do it. Good. I probably have some in GPP because they're heavyweights, but, God, I can't pick him straight. Anyway, let's move on. Long way to go, and we're good at talking, guys. We're good at talking fights. By the way, chat is going it's pretty fun over there. If you're watching this after the fact, should jump in chat Fridays at 8 o'clock for Fight IQ. Max Griffin 9,000 taking on Thiago Alves at 7,200. Max Griffin is the favorite in Brazil against the Brazilian legend -192. Alves, the comeback is +177. Look, 10 years ago, close fight. But I think Griffin's going to be too much here. Chris?
Yeah. I agree with you. I see some people liking Alves as the dog play here, which I could kind of see just for the experience factor. But I think Max Griffin is just going to be way too quick and powerful. I mean, I liked Alves in that fight against Kuchenko because I thought Kuchenko was going to give him enough time to get his offense working. He still didn't throw nearly enough for me. Still almost won that fight. I thought it was close. But I just think Max Griffin's going to be too quick, too powerful. He throws in combination. He can wrestle a little bit when he gets his game going. Not that Alves is easy to be taken down, but, I mean, just another wrinkle in his game. And I just think Alves is nearing that end where, you know, I mean, he's just sort of not pulling the trigger as much as I want him to. He's sort of a dying breed, that sort of, you know, stand-up tall Muay Thai striker. And I just think that Griffin is more dynamic on the feet, and I think he's going to get this done here.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Chris. I mean, believe it or not, Alves and Griffin are only a few years apart in age, although Alves has had such a longer career, and you know, he looks it, he wears it. Dare I suggest that Alves might be a victim of USADA, where, you know, his game definitely changed once USADA came into play. The reach and height advantage, I think the reach advantage is at least 6 inches here. He's got a height advantage and a reach advantage, a power advantage. As much as we all might like to see Alves go out, you know, I think this might be an opportunity for him to leave his gloves in the octagon, win or lose. I think it's worth having a few shares because the fight is in Brazil. Griffin isn't great, but I think he'll have enough here to get it done. And he has some finishing potential. So for a 9K fighter, I will have some shares. I'm really not confident in anything in the upper range, but I will have a few shares of Griffin. I'm picking him to win here.
All right, moving on. We have Mara Romero Barella. Somebody get Dan Hardy a way to say that. At 7,600, taking on, her first name is, say Talia, right? Talia Santos at 8,600. Yes. I don't know why I struggled over that. I have a bet on Santos, so we'll cover that in a second. At 8,600, at the line right now on this fight. See if I got it's exactly, yeah, it's a little better than when I bet it. Minus 165 for Santos. Barella, the comeback is plus 155. I kind of just alluded to it. I think the only advantage Barella could have is on the mat. I don't think she has a way to get it there. She's afraid of getting hit, and Santos is a really good striker. Give me Santos, and on most weeks, I think it'd be hard to fit her in cash at 8,600, but there's not a lot of safety around this week. There just really isn't those big grapplers. I like Santos a ton in all formats at minus 165. Joe, you are the WMMA whisperer, as we all know. Is my money well spent on Talia Santos?
Yeah, I like Santos quite a bit here. I mean, if you look at Barella's last fight, I mean, this was a fight metric special. She got credited for way more strikes than she actually landed against Chookagian. By my count, she landed maybe 20 to 25 strikes of 120 thrown. You know, I think she landed, you know, I think they gave her three times as many as she actually.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was looking at this earlier on the UFC site, and it said she landed like 26 of 100 or something like that.
She got credited with way more strikes than she actually, hit. I mean, if she landed that many strikes, Chookagian would have been touched up. Anyway, be that what it may, both fighters are blue belts in BJJ. I really liked the striking I saw in the kicks. I mean, kind of exciting that Santos, you know, her Muay Thai. I mean, yes, her record is can crushing 101, you know, especially in Brazil. So we don't really, the quality competition, you could just look their records up. I it's bad, but I certainly think that she has enough to beat Barella. And, you know, she's home. It's in Brazil. I think this is a prospect that, you know, the UFC will look to promote. They have a little bit of egg on their face from the last card with Lipinski, who obviously did not perform as well as they would have hoped. But I'm going back to the well with the Brazilian fighter this week, making her debut. I am on Santos as well, and I think she gets it done quite easily.
Chris, you're always one for a good upset. You got one here?
No, I was actually going to tell you to breathe easy because I'm confirming that your bet is a good one.
Oh, now I'm nervous. God damn it.
I like Santos a lot too. You guys touched on it. The striking is really nice. I love how she ends her combinations with kicks, like a Jose Aldo in there. But I also think she's pretty good at jiu-jitsu herself. I'm not sure that Barella even has a huge advantage there, even if she does have one. And your point is well taken, Sean, that she doesn't really have a way to get it to the mat. She got Chookagian to the mat once.
And Chookagian was up instantly.
Yeah, up instantly, and I was able to kick her off and just sort of. So if she could do that, then I expect a BJJ fighter to not really have that much issue. Barella doesn't move her head when she strikes. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It's just she just sort of leaves her chin right where it is and throws these straight punches. She's not going to have any chance on the feet, and unless she bum rushes and gets a takedown, which she tried to do multiple times before she got one in that third round against Chookagian, it didn't work. Santos has good in and out movement. I don't think she's going to be there for a takedown. That's kind of why Barella wasn't even shooting in the first couple of rounds, because she couldn't measure the distance. I like Santos a bunch here too. So Sean, rest easy. Your bet is safe.
It's worth mentioning though that Barella did this camp and does train at American Top Team, as does for this camp Junior Albini.
And I think also in that last fight, Amanda Nunes was actually in her corner. I don't know what good it did, but there it was.
Not much.
Yeah.
I don't. Whatever. I can't. It doesn't change my opinion at all. Anyway, let's move on to Marcus Perez at 7,300, taking on Hernandez at 8,900. Fluffy Hernandez is the favorite. Anthony Hernandez -145. Comeback on Perez +135. Starting to get a little bit of odds values there, as everybody is picking Perez. The line is closing. Hernandez is just flew out of my head. He's the prospect of Forrest Griffin, right, guys?
Who?
Isn't he the guy who's like trained? Is
Hernandez?
Yeah.
No, he trains with Max Griffin.
Oh, Max.
Yeah.
Honestly, Forrest Griffin. Wasn't he?
Did you just watch a Tom Hanks movie?
I might have.
Yeah.
No. I was thinking of the UFC fighter Forrest Griffin. You know, Captain Harry Pants.
Yeah, he's a NorCal prodigy. He trains with Max Griffin.
All right, sorry guys, brain fart there. Anyway, Perez we've seen against the like of Eric Anders. He lost James Bochnevich. He lost Andrew Sanchez last time out. And Hernandez making his UFC debut is a pretty good striker. Perez should have a grappling advantage, but he gets hit a lot on the feet. And he backs straight up, which I hate. So I keep going back and forth in this one. I do think it's closer than that. I think the line is right now, but the salary I'm getting on DraftKings, I think, is off. I think Perez is the value. So I'm picking Perez in terms of value, but every time I see a play out in my head, I just don't know. The way he backs up makes me really nervous. And I keep wanting to pick Anthony Hernandez, but I keep hesitating. So we'll see if one of you guys has a good argument for me. Chris?
I agree almost 100%. I think, I'm actually a Marcus Perez fan. I've picked him in, I think, either all of his fights or all but one. Anyway, but he does get in trouble when guys come after him, because he does tend to back up straight and eat shots. I would disagree slightly. I wouldn't say Hernandez is a good striker. I'd say he's aggressive and powerful. But that's about it. But that could be enough here. The one thing I think that Perez has going for him is that, he didn't really use his grappling in his last fight. But I think if you look at Hernandez's record, he's got like four guillotine chokes in a row. And that's because he likes to wade himself into the clinch and look for it. So if he's going to wade himself into the clinch, I like Perez to be the stronger guy, even if he's – not the better technical takedown artist. He might not be, but I think he is the stronger guy.
What was that?
Are we okay?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
My dinner was just being brought to me by my lovely and awesome wife. So sorry. About that. Right.
It sounded like the bug spray truck in Eric's neighborhood in Minnesota.
It was the wrapping on some Chinese noodles.
Okay. Oh, good.
Knock yourself out with that.
Enjoy. But yeah, I think that if he wades himself into the clinch, Hernandez could find one of his body lock takedowns. I think he's going to be the stronger guy, and I think once he gets to the mat, he's going to have a huge jiu-jitsu edge. Trains with Damian Maia, if I'm not mistaken. So, and we've seen his chops in the octagon already. That's the binary way this fight goes, in my opinion. The forward pressure and power of Hernandez is too much, or Hernandez gets a grappling exchange. It should be noted that I don't think Hernandez, or at least not that often, has been out of the first round. So if Perez can get him there, it'll be interesting to see what his gas tank looks like. It's worth noting that Perez gets tired too, although he does keep fighting when he's tired. We haven't seen what Perez does when he's tired. So I'm going to flip a coin and say, like, I want to pick Perez so badly because I like him as a fighter, but
you can. You've talked all around this.
I just, huh?
You've
I know,
talked
right?
All around it.
I'm a politician. This is how I work. But But I really think that the pressure and power might just be too much for him, as much as I hate to say it. So I'm going to pick Hernandez in what should be a close fight.
Joe, how about you?
Yeah, if this wasn't his first fight coming off the Dana White Contender Series, I would be a bit more confident in Hernandez. His first fight in the promotion, having to go to Brazil. I am going to pick Hernandez, but it's not a uber confident pick. I think it's definitely worthwhile to have shares on both sides of this fight, but I will pick Hernandez for the win.
All right.
I'm coming.
I was ready to step in.
Nobody wants that.
Come on.
I'm just kidding. I appreciate the assist.
But
we have to talk about Lavin Hassouza, who fights at strawweight, and she costs $9,100, taking on Sarah Frota, who fights at featherweight. Featherweight. No, she, in all seriousness, she came in 7 pounds overweight for this fight. Unprofessional, didn't even try. The size is going to be the big factor here in this one. She's 7,100. The odds in this fight, Stoz is still the favorite, minus 200. Frota and her 7 pounds of tattoos, which I stole that joke from somewhere on Twitter, at plus 185. Look, Stoz is the better fighter, but she's undersized. Chris, is it really – actually, we'll start with Joe for this one. Does it go deeper than that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it does concern me. Look, Sosa could fight at atom weight. I would be shocked if she cuts any weight at all to make 115. Where Frode, on the other hand, has fought at bantamweight. So this is kind of an interesting dynamic. Now, I asked this on the Alpha Pod that I did earlier today. I know that she's sacrificing 40% of her purse. However, I just don't know if there's any other stipulations on what her max weight could be on fight night. We've seen that a lot where fighters have missed weight. They do sacrifice some of their purse, but jurisdictions also will mandate a max weight that they could weigh at, you know, the time of the fight. Now, if that's not a stipulation, I mean, we could certainly see her coming into the ring at like 135, 140 even. Because obviously if she's fought at bantamweight, she probably walks around higher than that. So it does concern me a little bit, although I still am of the belief that Sosa's skill set is much greater. I don't know if it's going to cause her to wear down the size differential. I'm still going to pick Sosa. I mean, generally, anybody who has tried to handicap missing weight has not done really well. I mean, you know, either your fighter misses weight, you fade, or the fighter that you're betting on, their opponent misses weight and you say, okay, well, you know, now I got to fade that way. I don't think it's really worked that great in the past. And I'll point out all the money that came in on Megan Anderson when she stood next to Holly Holm, and everybody said, oh my God, look how much bigger Megan Anderson is versus Holly Holm. And I mean, I think that fight closed it close to pick. And we all saw what happened to Megan Anderson. So I'm going to stay fast with Sosa. I really like her skill set. I think she's the Brazilian gangster. That's her nickname. Gangsta. I like her. I'm going to go with her here. She was one of my stronger plays in that 9K price range, but I am a little tentative. I still like her more than I would like, say, Bibliotov. So Sosa's the pick. I think she still has the skill set to win.
Chris, how about for you?
I've been looking forward to a fade on Sosa ever since she came in. Couldn't do that against Chambers, of course, because she's Alex Chambers. I'm not sure if I can do it here either, but I think it's much closer. The main reason that I don't like Sosa is that she's very liable to get backed up and really just eat shots. She did that throughout her Invicta career. And when she does come forward, like in the Chambers fight, all she really has is, you know, one looping overhand that she tries to close the distance with to get in range for a takedown. The one thing that I can say about the opponent here is that I wouldn't call her a good striker, but I would call her an aggressive striker with more power than Sosa has, who, you're muted, there, Sean. An aggressive striker with more power than Sosa has, that throws in volume. So I like that about her. What I don't like about her is she tends to give up takedowns. She's a little too comfortable on her back. But I don't know, like, in the last fight against Chambers, we all picked Souza because we knew that once the fight got to the ground, it was an instant sub. I'm not sure if that's the case here. I think that Fuerte has enough jiu-jitsu here that she can probably keep herself safe. I don't really see her getting subbed, quite honestly. And if she's not going to get subbed, it's hard for me to see how Souza wins it.
Volume.
She's certainly not going to win it for 9,100 for value there. I just think, like, I've seen Souza get affected enough by shots, and we have an aggressive opponent here. I think that might be enough to take Fritz as a dog play. I think I might be fading the 9,100 here.
I don't mind a couple shots of Frota because I was agreeing with you. She does hit hard. We've seen Souza wobbled before, but I just skill wise, I think Joe has it. And she's just better. Should be more technical, speed, volume.
I do see a sub, by the way. I'm predicting Souza by
okay,
sub.
Okay, so there all you right, go. Fair enough.
Let's so to recap, I'm agreeing with both of you. I think Souza is the clear pick to win, but Frota's so much bigger and stronger and hits hard that I don't mind some shots of her shots.
Well, for the record, I'm actually picking Frota. So
well, you're crazy.
Okay.
Moving on.
Just no, so we
I
got
it. I get it. The size advantage. Anyway, let's get to what it's becoming my dog pick of the week. Johnny Walker, 9,200, taking on Justin Ledet at 7,000. No. Johnny Walker is the favorite, and he's a large favorite. -192, the comeback on Ledet, +177. I wish I didn't see today that Ledet is a flat earther. That really kind of bothers me.
Yeah, him and Kyrie Irving. Yeah.
Like more than it should, but
I'm sorry, he's a what?
A flat earther.
He believes the earth is flat.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Yeah. I thought it was bad enough he was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway.
That's even worse.
Yeah, it's got me a little rattled, actually. So mostly I just think this fight should be closer. Everyone's on the Johnny Walker bandwagon because he beat up what's his name on the Dana White? He won a Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series fight.
He beat Frankenstein and then he beat Khalil Roundtree.
Right, and he beat Khalil Roundtree. Look, guys, I picked Khalil to beat what's his nuts? He's not going to win. Gokhan Saki. They're just stood and trade. Walker landed an elbow in the clinch. They're both one-dimensional guys. I've seen Walker knocked out on the regional scene. He's just aggressive. He's going to come forward. And Ledet, for all his problems, he's a really good boxer. I'm not saying he's going to, one-punch KO Walker, although we've seen him drop a ton. Walker's just so aggressive, and Ledet's boxing to me is so good that I can see him circling off, landing a couple shots. They're big guys at 205. I've seen Walker drop before by not the biggest shots in the world and repeatedly in his career. I just like how technical Ledet is in the feet. Either way, I like this fight a lot for tournaments because if Walker wins, I think he's going to do what he always does and come forward and be aggressive. I think it's kill or be killed. I tend to lean towards the underdog. And in this case, I'm getting an underdog who I think is more technical. So I'm going to take Ledet. I'm going to have a fair amount of him in tournaments. I think the line's a little wide. Johnny Walker's a perfectly fine GPP play. I just wouldn't go there in cash.
So I can understand people not trusting Walker for the reasons you mentioned, the quality of opponents, and we have seen him hurt before, we have seen him finish before, in fact, but I am comfortable taking as much Walker as possible, and here's why. When you look at the guys Justin Ledet has fought, the only guy who's got near the dimensions of a guy like Walker is Alexander Rakic. And if you go back to that fight, I think that Johnny Walker can do a lot of the same things. I think he can trouble him with kicks. Mm-hmm. I think he's gonna be way stronger in the clinch. I just don't know if he's gonna have an answer for the kicking game. He didn't with Rakic. And as much as you want to say he's a good boxer, yeah, he is, but he's also a point fighter, and he makes it a point to tell us that he's a point fighter, because when he had Chase Sherman hurt and had Chase Sherman saying, please knock me out, He didn't knock him out, and then said, told the audience that this isn't a street fight, it's prize fighting or whatever he said. So he's not, he doesn't have a killer instinct. He's not going to be in there looking for a finish. And Johnny Walker is a powerful behemoth of a man who's going to be stronger. I think the length is going to bother. I think the length is going to bother Ledet. I don't think that boxing is enough. When I think that Ledet should have stayed at heavyweight. I don't see how he's going to survive with all these athletic guys that are at light heavy who are going to have deeper MMA games than him. And I think Johnny Walker is one of them. I don't think boxing is going to be enough here, especially the rote combinations that Ledet throws. I think it's just going to be too easy to see coming. I think Walker knocks him out. I'm going to have a lot of Walker.
I think you're a little early on the hype train, but we'll see. Joe, how about you got?
Okay, so I'm wondering if Ledet is a flat earther because it's easier to grow vegetables on level ground.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm actually on Ledet here. I'm with Sean on this one. Chris, we can talk about this offline because I think my battery might die before I make my point. But I don't see a whole lot of similarities between Rackett's game and Ratchik's game and Johnny Walker's game.
They have an active kicking game. That's enough.
I'm talking about the ground fighting. I see actually, believe it or not, Ledet, who has some subs, as having an advantage if it went to the ground. He's a much more technical boxer. There's a lot
you
of
you think Ledet is going to sub out this tarantula legs over there?
Look, I actually called a Ledet by sub fight at +700. So no, I don't think he's going to sub him out. No, I'm not going there. However, I think there's a recency bias that's affecting both of these fighters, both positive and negatively. So you've got the positive recency bias because of the freaky elbow KO of Roundtree, who, by the way,
hang on. There's nothing freaky about that.
I think 99 out of 100 fighters could have gotten out of the way of that.
Remember when Mike Perry put Jake Ellenberger unconscious?
I've never been a fan of Roundtree. Let's go there. Okay, I've never been a Roundtree fan. I was with Gokhan Saki. Yeah, okay, great, perfect matchup for him. But we're not talking about Roundtree. Look, I am going to have shares of Walker, but I think at 7K for a guy who's a more technical striker who should have better striking defense, I'm not saying he's going to finish him, but I could easily see him outpointing him and winning a decision, especially since if this fight goes deep, I believe Ledet's going to have better cardio. At 7K, it opens up a lot of possibilities. I will have shares of both guys, but I will probably be higher weighted to Ledet.
I just don't see how you could see him get kicked to death by Rakic to the point where he has to be the one shooting for a takedown and say that Ledet has more. Like, I don't even know what you're saying. Like,
I'm saying that Walker does not have the same kicking game that Rakic has.
I mean, guys, it's going to be good enough. Trust me. We'll see.
Let's move on to something that's going to pain me physically. Like, what's about to happen, guys, is going to hurt if you know me. Charles Oliveira, 8,500, taking on one of the tamers. It's the big tamer, David Tamer. It's 7,700. Line on this fight as of right now. Oliveira is -120. Tamer +110. The mid-range is really condensed, and this is the largest margin.
Oh, my God. You're taking off. Okay, good.
Because there was – hang on. No. You don't know what I'm going to do. Because there were so many fights that were in that -110-ish area – this range kind of ballooned, and Oliveira is 8,500. But most weeks he'd be 82 or 83. Take that for what it's worth. It's just a commentary. It's got nothing to do with what I was going to say. What I'm actually going to say, and it hurts me a lot, I'm picking DuBronx.
I did. Yeah, I knew it. There you go. Go ahead.
I freaking hate that I just said that. To me, David Tamer, when he scrambles back up, leaves himself open for a guy like Charles Oliveira to grab a sub. Oliveira has to close the distance, and he's not great about getting hurt. This is another fight. This is going to go one of two ways. Either Oliveira is going to be terrified to close the distance, and it's Tamer is just going to point fight him the whole way, or Oliveira is going to get a hold of Tamer And I don't think Tamer is going to get out of the grasp of Oliveira. He's shown some escapability in other fights, but we're talking like Lando Venata, Nick Lentz. Like, this is a different level of submission artist in DuBronx. And usually I pick against DuBronx all the time because he's a quitter, and he is a quitter. And I won't be surprised, by the way, if that first scenario I laid out where they're fighting at range and he can't get a takedown, if he just quits in the third round, wouldn't shock me at all. But ultimately, he closed the distance once. I think he will find a submission, control the fight there. I can't believe I'm picking DuBronx. Someone please help me. Joe, start us off.
Okay, so look, this fight could be incredibly boring because one of the most god-awful fights I've seen was Jakar Close against David Tamer. And I commented about this on Twitter. I mean, that was almost as painful or more painful to watch than Lewis Ngannou. I don't think I've ever seen a ref have to tell fighters to engage so often. So I could certainly see, both guys trying to play to their strength here. One in striking and the other with, getting a grappling exchange working and neither being able to make it happen. So in which case it could either be the first guy who makes a mistake, is going to capitalize on that, or it just ends in a boring, low scoring type of decision fight. Now, one other part to that narrative is Charles Oliveira is 14-0 in fights in Brazil. 14-0. That's pretty compelling. And he's beaten guys better than Tamer in Brazil. So I think, and the other thing is, I think Tamer is going to be very highly owned because he does have odds value here at his price point. So I see him being very highly owned. I've seen a lot of split opinions on this fight. It's hard for me to go against a 14-0 trend in front of your home crowd when I know that you've beaten better fighters than the guy you're facing. You're coming off of a 3-fight winning streak. Tamer has had incredibly boring fights. Not to say that he could not clip and make Oliveira quit, which is why I think it's especially with the line value, it's worth having shares of Tamer. But I am going to pick Oliveira as well here.
Chris?
Yeah, well, here comes another split, I guess. All your points are pretty well taken. It's just that, like, when you say that Tamer pops back up against lesser competition, I mean, I don't know how much more quickly he can do it. I mean, I think that he's going to pop up against pretty much anybody in those spots where he does pop up. I mean, he's notoriously hard to hold down.
It's not so much that he pops up quick. It's that when he does that against the way he does it against a good submission grappler, I think he's going to get
his give up his back. Yep.
That's my problem is he gets up so quick that it's a little reckless. And I just when I was watching, his back is there to be taken in spots that like Nick Lentz wasn't going to do. If he does that against Oliveira, I think he's got a problem.
I think the window is going to be too brief. Like it doesn't matter how quick you are. Referencing Aldo twice before, once was a joke, but that's almost like an Aldo get up the way he does it. Like he's, as soon as his hip hits the mat, he's back on his feet. And I like that about him. I think that the reason why Tamer has had such boring fights is he doesn't care. If you don't engage with him, he won't engage. He will just stay at his range the entire fight. And, take what you give him. I do think Oliveira is going to come forward, but I think Tamer is going to pick him off consistently. And Tamer is very good about circling off and getting back to the center of the octagon. I think he's going to do that here. I don't think Oliveira is going to be able to hold him down, which is the crux of the disagreement here. And look, I could be wrong about that. I don't think that I am.
I wouldn't mind seeing DuBronx get knocked out. That's fine.
Oh, no, I know. That's why. That's why he's not giving me that hard of a time on this one. I can see that. But I just think that Tamer picks him off. He probably doesn't knock him out because the way Tamer fights, he really has to hit you with the miracle shot to knock you out because of what I mentioned before. So I think that Tamer, even at his best, is probably only a cash play, but. I just don't think that Oliveira catches him here, and so I'm going Tamer.
All right, next up, Damian Maia, 8,700, taking on Lyman Good at 7,500. Maia's the favorite, -175. Comeback on Good is +165. Brazilian legend, the grappling legend, Leimi Maia back in action. Is 0 for a bajillion in his last three fights getting takedowns before anybody says it. Those three guys were Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman. Lyman Good is not any of those guys. Look, I'm on Damian Maia in this fight. I have a bet on this fight. Damian Maia to win by submission is like plus 150. That's the way he's winning this fight. And his odds just to win are minus 175. So for me, I like it. I don't think they're not pretty takedowns, but the way he goes after them and Good in the clinch, muscular guy, I think he'll tire out eventually. Damian Maia has not been knocked out in shit. When's the last time Damian Maia was knocked out?
Once. He's only been knocked out once in his career.
So that's the way Good wins this fight. I don't see it happening here, so give me Damian Maia by submission. Chris.
Well, I think I'm on Maia too, but I have to say, I don't think a knockout's the only way. I mean, we just saw him lose three in a row where he wasn't knocked out. But I get what you're saying. I get the main point. I'm just being a kind of a prick. But I think one of the things that I like about Maia, and I think that this doesn't really get talked about a lot, is that, like, his kickboxing, I think, is pretty underrated. Now, don't get me wrong. He's not going to go out there and win a fight against the kickboxer with kickboxing, but it's good enough that he can stay in the fight long enough to try to get his takedowns and progress to his positions where he wants it. And, you know, his entries are pretty good. He just doesn't follow through. He tries to wrestle from his knees a lot, and that's sort of where the problem comes in. The problem that was going to come in this fight, I think, is that Lyman Good's just a really strong guy. We saw him fend off a couple takedowns from Zaleski Dos Santos just by using his strength. I just don't know if we can rely on Damian Maia to hit takedowns. And I think that if he doesn't, you know, he's probably going to get lit up. Good is a good aggressive pressure striker. He might not knock him out, but, you know, it could be a situation that we've seen where he just can't get the takedown. And, you know, he tries and Good just wins the decision. I am going to pick Maia here begrudgingly, but I'll say be careful on DK because, what's he, 8,700, right?
Yep.
So, like, if he doesn't get out of the first – if he doesn't get it in the first round, you're probably not making value because he doesn't do a whole lot else.
Here's the problem on this card. How many fighters on this card have an inside-the-distance prop that is minus money? You're paying juice.
I don't know. You can tell me.
Zero. Not okay. A single fighter on this card, including Johnny Walker, is minus money to win inside the distance. So he probably needs it in the first round, but you could go second here. Like, this might not be a terribly high-scoring card. Not a lot of finishes.
Maybe not, but, you know.
It's your point's taken, though. I get it.
Like, if he could give me, like, maybe if he could, like, give me some mat returns or something, but I can't even rely on – I have to rely on, like, one takedown and the finish. And, you know, it's just getting harder. I love Damian Maia, so it's hard for me to – but it's getting harder and harder to trust. And against a better wrestler, you might say, well, that was Zaleski Dos Santos. But, I mean, to me, there's nothing to say that, you know, his strength – you can't just keep him on his feet the way it did in the Dos Santos fight because, I mean, Maia, for all his wrestling just hasn't ever learned to just drive through his takedown. So it worries me. I'm going to begrudgingly pick Maia, but I'm going to say be careful on the play, and I'm going to say don't overlook Good as the dog either.
Joe, who you got?
Over the course of a fight, technique is way more important than strength. And the last three matchups for Damian Maia were about as bad as you could possibly get for a submission grappler. With not only elite wrestlers, but Division I college, you know, elite wrestlers. Lyman Good is not that. Lyman Good, yes, has 85% takedown defense. I would be shocked if Damian Maia is not going to get his takedowns here against Lyman Good, because I think his technique will beat whatever perceived strength advantage that Lyman Good has. That's one point. The second point is that this is a fight in Brazil. I honestly believe that after this fight, Damian Maia is going to leave his gloves in the octagon and retire. I'm guessing. I don't have any inside information to that. I do think that, you know, this is a fight that the UFC believes Damian Maia can win in front of his home crowd, as popular a fighter as he is. It's worth having a few shares of Lyman Good in case Maia has deteriorated a lot quicker than maybe any of us thought, you know, due to the last three losses that he took. But I have come around to the point where I like Maia like a lot more than when the fight was first announced. So I'm going for the narrative, you know, and for what I see as a sizable advantage in one facet of mixed martial arts. I'm going to take Damian Maia here to win by submission.
All right. Couple things I have to jump in real quick. No one would ever call wrestling from your knees good technique. That's number one. Number two is, do you think that Damian Maia is a much better wrestler than Zaleski Dos Santos is?
I think he is much better at getting takedowns.
I think he'll tire out fast over three rounds defending takedowns, no matter what they are, than Woodley Covington or Usman, who just can defend takedowns all day every day.
Well, okay, but Maia gets really tired too. Remember the Covington fight?
I think you got to throw those three fights out. I mean, these are elite division one guys who are all in, who are 1, 2, and 3 ranked in the division. You got three rated welterweights.
All right, point taken. But let's go back a couple fights then. He couldn't get what's his face, Jorge Masvidal. The guy before that was Carlos Condit, who gets taken down by everybody.
Wait. He took down Masvidal 4 times.
He rode Masvidal back the entire time. And Masvidal is so much better than Lyman Good. Come on. Masvidal would clean Lyman Good's clock.
I'm just pointing out the last sub that he got was on a guy who everybody takes down and gets what they want on.
For what it's worth, he once took down Ryan LaFlair, who was a D1 wrestler, 5 times a UFC
fight. And he subbed Gunnar Nelson, who has got is also elite BJ.
We are talking about a long time ago on both of those things.
But I think you're looking at the last three fights he had against elite wrestlers, and well, Lyman Good is not that.
All right.
Okay. Agree, disagree. Let's move on. We got two more fights here, and we're at an hour.
Yeah.
Renato Moicano, 8,300, taking on Jose Aldo at 7,900. Moicano is the favorite, minus 135. Aldo's a dog at plus 125. New guard versus the old guard. Look, I wish this fight was 5 rounds, or I wish that Moicano had just a little bit more volume to take advantage of that Aldo gas tank. Ultimately, I'm still going to side with Moicano. I think his striking is actually, and those kicks he throws. Me and Joe are at the fight in Brooklyn against Calvin Cater. Oh, those freaking kicks, man. Those were a thing of beauty. I don't think Aldo will be able to use leg kicks to his advantage. I think Moicano is obviously younger, fresher, more durable. I think he's going to have to weather an early storm from Aldo, who always comes out hard. But after that, I think Moicano actually picks him apart and wears down Aldo, which is crazy to say because he's a legend. But give me Moicano in this one. Joe, how about for you?
Favorite selection on the slate here. Cash, GPPs across the board. We'll have significant exposure, probably in excess of what any and all ownership projections are. And that is Moicano by finish. Although I'm not putting much into his, you know, finishing Jeremy Stevens, who I thought has been fighting over his skis for quite some time. A very fortunate victory against Emmett. You know, you could say illegal. but whatever. I like Moicano a lot here. I think 8.3K is a gift. I would make him much higher. Obviously, the UFC sees a lot in Moicano. He was a bad decision away from beating Ortega. He was the backup fighter for Ortega Holloway. I like Moicano quite a bit. He's going to get the finish here. Enough said. I will have very little exposure to Aldo.
Chris? You gonna take us around in a talking circle and pick Aldo here?
I am. You know what? I've had a nasty little habit of undervaluing Moicano and overvaluing Aldo of recent times, and I'm gonna continue that here, I guess. I think I don't know, like I said that I liked Cub Swanson in that fight, which looks kind of silly now, but I will say that before that stiff jab landed that knocked him down, Cub was kind of running away with that first round.
What?
Go back and watch it.
Come on, dude.
That's all I'll say.
Please.
But I think that look, the reason I like Aldo here is I think that I have a hunch, and it's a little more than a hunch at this point. But well, two things. One is that I think that Moicano doesn't like guys who come after him, and I think Aldo's going to do that. The second, more specific point is that I don't think Moicano is going to do well if he has to go to war. I think he's got a lot of Thiago Santos in him, where if you throw at him in the pocket, he just does a lot of this to try to.
You can't use that analogy right now. Did you see the war Santos just had with Jimmy Manoa?
Well, no, I'm just saying the way he counterpunches.
Okay.
The way he counterpunches.
Okay. I thought you meant about being in a war. Okay.
Okay. All right. But the way he counterpunches is just sort of to throw as hard as he can and just hope that he hits you. And Aldo still slips, still has trunk movement, still has head movement. I think his hands are still plenty quick, even if he's lost a step. I think he's still plenty powerful. And look, you want to talk about Moicano's leg kicks? I don't think you want to get into a leg kicking war with Aldo, even at this stage in his career.
When does he use the leg kick, Aldo? But
if you're going to leg kick him, I promise you he's going to leg kick you.
His Crocs were cool. That was the last time he used the leg kicks.
But he was
wearing Crocs.
But they weren't kicking him. I guarantee you, if you kick him, he's going to remember that it's there, and he's going to kick you.
So he's all of a sudden going to wake up and say, I got a leg kick. I might as well use it. Even though I haven't used it since, you know, Obama was president.
He fired a couple good ones at Max Holloway. But regardless, I know that Moicano can win. I think he's a really good striker from range. He's obviously a good submission artist. I don't think we have to worry about that. Aldo's takedown defense is legendary. I think that Aldo is going to draw him into a firefight, and I think Aldo is going to win it. So Aldo by finish.
All right, let's get to the main event. It is Marlon Moraes, 8,800, taking on Rafael Assuncao at 7,400. Moraes is the favorite, -150. Assuncao, +140. Got some odds value on Assuncao as the line is closed a little bit. We've seen this fight before. Assuncao won. Look, before Marlon Moraes' last two knockouts, these guys are very similar. They're point fighters, fast bantamweights who understand distance and striking. I'm not going to get on board the Marlon Moraes knockout train. They're still a 135er. He's not TJ Dillashaw. He had that crazy knee against Sterling, the head kick in the first round against Rivera. I don't think that streak continues. Those, you know, good performances, obviously. The over in this fight, over 4.5 rounds, is like -160, I think. So it should go the distance. Technical fight, close. I don't think it'll be high scoring. Both these guys, unless they finish, which isn't often, don't score well. I don't think it's a good fight to stack. I'm on Joe's team of non-stacking this week. I'm assuming he's not going to stack. I like Assuncao. I think he's a little bit better all around. Close fight. I think it should be a pick'em. So for the odds I'm getting on Assuncao, the pick is Assuncao for sure. Chris, you're smirking over there, so start us off.
No, I'm just reading chat. You guys are characters in there. But I agree, close fight. It should be said that this isn't a fight. I mean, most of the time when we see rematches, it's from like a few years ago. This one happened less than 2 years ago. So, you know, we should basically be seeing what we saw. And I think that what we're going to see is just Marlon Moraes being a lot faster. And I think that, you know, literally he was like landing two or three counter shots when Assuncao would throw one. But I don't think this is a good DK fight, because I think what's going to happen and what happened in the first fight is that both guys are going to look to counter to a certain degree. And I think that's gonna really keep the volume low. And I think both guys are tough and hard to hurt. And I think Marlon Moraes' takedown defense is good enough that Sun Tzu is not going to take him down. Gun to my head, I think I'm gonna take Moraes here just for the speed advantage. He's got enough power to hurt a Sun Tzu. But I do think it's a close fight. It's one that I'm not going to be targeting very much this week at all.
Joe?
Yeah, so, you know, Chris stole some of my thunder. I mean, not only is this – I don't see this fight as stackable. I see this fight as okay to fade in GPPs. If you were to wager, how many times do you think a Sun Tzu has scored over 100 points in his career? Once in the UFC. Now, I'm going to pick Moraes to win, but I actually think the value play is on a Sun Tzu because if he does win, he will likely get you 10x. Likely, not, you know, 100%, but he will likely get you 10x based on his price. I see this as sort of a low scoring snooze fest. I think the USC had to give a Sun Tzu, pretty much a title fight. I don't know that they wanted to. One main event that I'm sort of looking like least forward to in recent memory. I think it's perfectly okay to fade this fight in GPPs. I will have some shares. I will probably have more shares of a Sun Tzu just because I think he does have a legitimate chance to win and he is a value play at 7.4K. For that very reason, I will have less shares of Moraes at 8.9K. However, if I was betting the fight, I would probably bet Moraes. So I'm going to pick Moraes. I don't think this is a great fight for DK. I kind of agree with everybody in that respect. But the pick to win is Moraes.
All right, let's do our hot takes and get the F out of here. I will say that I nailed my hot take 2 weeks ago. The winning GPP score was massive.
Yes, it was.
So tons of finishes. I got one right after being wrong the week before. I don't remember what you guys did, but let's
My hot take shit the bed. I can't remember what it was, but I know it was bad.
I think it involved Lipsky, I think.
Yeah. That you would get a finish, yeah.
All right, hot takes for this week. I am going to say, I don't want to go finishes again. Justin Ledet beats Johnny Walker.
Okay, I'll go. I'm going to say DuBronx and Maya. It's a Brazilian stack submission parlay. So I'm going to go with DuBronx and Maya to get victories by submission, and I'm going to call that out as a parlay. I don't know what the odds are on DuBronx by submission, but I think, Sean, you said it was plus
155.
So I'm guessing that the parlay is probably a pretty decent one. So that's my hot take.
Chris?
Well, I wasn't going to go finish again, but I kind of have to go by the groans I get from you guys in the audience. And I think there's a clear winner this week, and that's Aldo finishing Moicano.
Whew. Okay.
That's definitely a hot take.
That's a hot take.
From as much as I'm not as confident as Joe is in Moicano, it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not the craziest thing you said.
Yeah, and if Chris is absent next week, it's he might be in a clinic for opioid dependency. But no, just kidding. Okay, Chris, like more power to you. Let's hope you don't get it. Because it will certainly kill my lineups. If Aldo finishes, I have so little Aldo right now in my lineups. I forget like a minuscule. I had to go back and add some lineups with Aldo in them because I had so much Moicano.
You can always go back and add a few more.
I don't know if I can. I don't see it. I really don't. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I think Aldo has got boxing on his mind. He wants to be a prize fighter. He purposely asked for the fight to only be three rounds. I think he has got one.
That's because he's got no gas tank.
Well, he's got one foot out the door, and he's already said he doesn't plan on contending for the title. So if you have no title aspirations and you have a foot out the door and you're looking at another form of combat sports, I just add that to my overall narrative on Moicano.
All right, guys. That's what we got for UFC Fortaleza, Brazil. Some good hot takes. mostly some good picks in there, some good analysis. Make sure you go to RotoWire. RotoWire.com. You know, that was a good joke. You would have just let it slide by. RotoWire.com/free 10-day free trial. Check out all their premium content. No credit card required. Thanks to them. Reminder to everybody out there, we should be on Sirius. Make sure and tweet Sirius. And everybody at RotoWire, let them know you enjoy the show. Click like, subscribe. Subscribe on iTunes. Greatly appreciate all you guys in chat, especially. It has been fun. We will see you next week for a card I'm really looking forward to.
Melbourne, baby. Get your Vegemite and Foster's ready.
UFC 234. I got to buy some Foster's as Whitaker takes on Gastelum. Guys, it was good hanging out. I'll talk to you soon. Good luck in your contest.
Later.